I'm so glad that you're here, and I'm so glad to be with you. I'm filling in for Nancy, who is laboring tonight, this week, in Colorado. So I pray she's having a great time on her retreat. And she called me and she said, I've got this fantastic class. Would you mind filling in for me? And I said, let me think about it. I'm a little bit covered over. So she gave me an overnight, and about 6 hours, 7 hours later, I said, I'd be glad to do it. And I really am glad to be here. Now, I understand, first of all, my name is Billy Grammer. With a name like that in any kind of Christian ministry, it always causes a pause on the other end of the telephone when they say, who's calling? And I say, it's Billy Grammer. And there's a pause because it didn't say Billy Graham. And my mom's name is Ruth. My dad's name is Billy. I'm sorry. This just followed me all my life. For 22 years, I was the counseling center director at Fellowship Dallas in Dallas, and we had a team of 5 full-time counselors, all licensed professional counselors, 4 part-time. And for 22 years, I directed that ministry. I was the clinical director, and I was on pastoral staff. In recent years, the last 4 years, as it happens in life, God kind of pushed me out of that nest, which I was very comfortable. There was a little turnover, certain events, and all the counseling ministry was disbanded for a new vision, as happens. So I'm in private practice now in Dallas, and I see quite a few people doing what I've always done, helping people in their struggles for growth, life, spiritual journey. So I'm a licensed professional counselor, licensed marriage and family therapist, and certified sexual therapist, and am ordained, have a theology degree, and love ministry. Love empowering people, love meeting people right where they are, shame-free, helping them move forward. So I realize this is a third class, and I'm jumping in. I have no idea what you've covered before me, and it's probably better that I don't. So I'm going to offer you what I'm calling in this path to a passionate marriage, laying a foundation. Now, I know Nancy has been laying a foundation regarding how you relate, how you converse, how you talk to each other. And I just want to add to it, and I've got a little marker board right here. I want to draw a little diagram. I want you to think of laying a foundation kind of as a target. What we find in life, and in marriages especially, which we're going to understand tonight, that when we talk about a passionate marriage, we're usually talking about something to do with our intimacy life, our sexual experience with each other. And everybody normally wants to jump right to the topic of how do we have fabulous, wonderful, loving, connected, intimate sexual relationship. It's a great topic. But everybody wants to jump right there. And what I find in life is that when dealing with myself, my marriage, and with couples, our sexual life with each other, our sexual intimacy, is intimately connected with all of our non-sexual ways that we relate. So when I'm working with a couple who are experiencing sexual dysfunction, I can assure you how they relate out here non-sexually, that is, go to the mall with each other, shop for furniture, look for a car, have a conversation, totally non-sexual. Some of their dynamics here are going to show up here because this is kind of the Super Bowl of relating in which everything is magnified. That's why we have such a difficult time talking about this and feel so much shame and embarrassment, because all of our dynamics, our growth areas, are coming out in our most intimate experience where we feel very vulnerable. And so I help couples change these dynamics, and I assure them, we're going to, in the course of our time together, talk explicitly about what happens here that's a little uncomfortable, but we can make it comfortable and fun and humorous. But we're also going to not talk about this. We're going to talk about concentric circles, very non-sexual, non-vulnerable, leading closer, closer, and closer into the bullseye. Because my conviction is what we're experiencing here, we're experiencing out here in muted forms. That if we can understand how we relate out here, we'll get a picture of this. And it's not very surprising that if I'm afraid to be thoughtful, loving, and honest, and authentic out here, I don't think I'm going to be able to achieve that in here when the stakes are higher. I'm going to feel more vulnerable, and it's going to be more difficult. So I want to learn how to relate out here, and we can move from the center out, and we can move from the outer towards the center, and we're going to change, effectively transform our life, and all are connected. That's a beautiful way that God has made us. So it's not surprising that how I might relate and present myself, if you really knew me, you would be not surprised that some of my growth areas are going to show up here. That's okay. That's the way God designed it. In fact, this is a little window into how I am out here. They're all connected. And we can talk about it honestly and without shame. Yay. Here we go. There's that. So, let's take a look at this and let's start. A passionate marriage. How about a question? What is a passionate marriage? What is a good marriage? If you would, let's take 2 to 3 minutes. I want you to turn your sheet over or right where it is. Draw a circle. Draw a circle individually and put inside that circle 3 to 5 things that you would include in a passionate marriage, a good marriage. Now you might say, good communication. Boy, that's one of the markers of a really good relationship. Okay, put it in there. You want to say, wow, we have playful, really great interactions with a twinkle in our eye. That's what you think is a passionate marriage, a good relationship. Put it in there. What is a good relationship? Now, you can't turn to your spouse and go, now, honey, what do you think I should put as a good relationship? Don't do that. You think of your own. Just take 60 seconds. What is a good marriage? Now, sometimes you could think, I know what a bad relationship is. Okay, start there and say, I don't want that. That's a start. And it's nice to know what a good relationship is because it gives you a target of where you're trying to get to. If you don't know what it is, we're very prone to turning to our spouse and saying, honey, I'm not sure what it is, but you're the expert. You tell me.
Or avoid it altogether.
Avoid it altogether. Absolutely. Okay. Just think about this with me. Now, as it happens when I'm working with couples, I have an intake form that I give to everybody, and I ask a bunch of questions. One of those questions near the end of the intake form is, if our time together is successful, help me know what that would look like from your perspective. Because I could deem it to be successful, but I need to know what it would look like for you. Because I keep that in mind every time I meet. I want to help accomplish things that matter to you. Because I work for you. And people forget that in therapy. They think when they come in, they're on my territory, and I have to tell them what to do. No, no, no. I'm a guest in your living room. You're hiring me for something very important for you. My job is to help you get there. And if it's unrealistic, my job is to shape your expectations. So I have this form. Here's what's very common, and it's probably occurring right now. Most of the time, I will take the form from the woman, from the wife, and she's filled out half page, where that question is, back, and attached an addenda, appendix, because she's very clear about what she wants, and what she's getting, and what she's not getting. I look at the form from the husband, one sentence, maybe three words, be a better husband. Of course, we don't know what be a better husband really means, but he wants to be that. So I have to really take my time and say, help me understand what that means, because his wife understands what it means, right? She has a list, and she's been trying to train him. All right, so give me a couple of things that you put in your circle. What would you put in a good relationship?
God-centered.
Okay, God-centered. I like that. We're going to talk about that in just a little bit.
Transparency.
Wow. So I'm thinking authenticity, right? The ability to be transparent, that is to say what's going on inside of me that you can't see, but I can experience. What was that?
Unselfish.
Ooh, I like that.
Safety.
Unselfish. Safety.
Trusting.
Trust has to do with safety and security. Good words.
Respectful.
Tell me again, respect.
Respectful.
Oh, I like that. R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
Affectionate.
Yeah, warm, affectionate,
honest and open.
Y'all are good. You know what? You've given some thought to this. That's why you're here.
Communication.
Communication.
Listening.
Ooh, not just speaking. All right, and the last one I'm going to put up here was what you just said. I can't remember because she said listening. Yeah. Good. Now, good job. It's why you're in this class. You've been thinking about this. Now, let me ask you this. These are all very important. You're dead on. How are these achieved? By what means are these actualized? We talk about it. We have a picture of a really good relationship in our head. What have you typically been taught? What is very natural for you when you think, I want a relationship that includes some, if not all, of these things? How are these things achieved? What have you been taught? How do we get there?
Provide.
Get right with God.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Something about getting right with God, yes. Uh-huh. And one was love. I love that. I love that. Now, let me tease it out a little bit for you. Because I have four shifts in thinking tonight. Four shifts. We're getting to shift number one. And I'm laying a foundation because I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee. I grew up in the music industry. My father was a professional musician in the music industry. I wonderfully have his talent genetically and ability. And I was trained in music from fifth grade on and went to music school. And one thing I can understand about music is in order to play jazz, in order to play improvisation, in order to play freely, with spontaneity, with feeling and meaning, not just scattered, You have to lay a foundation of discipline, arpeggios, scales, etudes, over and over and over. So you have to be highly disciplined to be spontaneous. But relationships and respect to relationships, they want to get to the bullseye really quickly. They want to play jazz tonight. But they haven't laid the foundation of self-discipline, self-control, done their scales, arpeggios, and etudes about how to have relationship. And they have incorrect paradigms that then they put their partner in. And I tell you what, they're trying their best, which I'm all for, but it's not working. Shift in thinking number one, and it may be apparent to you as the nose on your face, but I'm going to say it anyway because it's important. There's no such thing as working on your relationship. So if you're here to work on your relationship, can you give me code on what that normally really means?
Fix your partner.
Thank you. So when people come to therapy, this is just because we're just very human. This is very natural. It's nothing to be ashamed of. And I ask people, help me understand why you're here. Well, we're here to work on our relationship. Notice the we language. We are here to work on our relationship. Now, I'm not disputing that. I think language is colloquial. We're very creative in how we use language. But you see, the person who spoke that is usually the 1% more motivated individual. Okay? I never assume that when I'm working with people, I have equal 50-50 investment in having a relationship, because I don't even know if they know what having a relationship means. So when one person speaks up after awkward silence, and they each look at each other, when I say, help me understand why you're here, it goes like this. You go. No, you go. No, you go ahead. We're here to work on our relationship. This is usually the motivated person, the one who speaks first. We, and when they use we language, without realizing it, the term we means you. We are here. Sorry, gender non-specific. We. Now, I haven't talked to the other person yet, but I know now the other person is like, okay, what you mean we? But we are here. So we usually is a bind. I'm here to work on the relationship because I'm very dissatisfied about what I'm getting from your end, and I want to talk about it with a therapist. Therapist? And sometimes people call ahead and say, look, I need to prep before we come. Okay? First question. Are you a Christian therapist? Yes. Now see, that has meaning. Because they're going to say, hopefully, you will use some influence with God and Scripture to leverage my partner to get them to do right, because Lord knows I've tried and tried and tried and I haven't been able to get it done. So I need to know, first of all, are you a believer? Yes? Great. You're on my side. Now I need to talk to you before we come in and explain the real issues. Because when we come in, you'll be able to see them. So when we're relating, this person usually makes eye contact with me as if to say, see? They're doing it right now. Remember what we talked about? And then it's like, Holy Father, please help me. Now, this is human. It's no shame. We all do this kind of thing. So that when we're sitting listening to somebody, great teacher in a sermon, and God is really speaking, one of our very first things that we do is we do this. We sneak a peek. What's that mean? Huh?
You stop talking to you.
You got it. Are you listening? You're looking bored and you're falling asleep. So when we get in the car, I'm going to say, so what did you think of what was taught this morning? I need to know that you got it. Okay? Now, this is very natural. But folks, there is no such thing as working on your relationship. That just means you want to work on the other person. They are without and beyond your control. Trust me. They're outside your realm of direct control. You can influence, you can love. You didn't cause the way they are, for the most part. You can't control the way they are, and you can't cure them. Do you know the three C's in recovery? You didn't cause it, you can't control it, and you can't cure it. Well, what can you do? What can you do? Thank you. Shift in thinking, number one. How are you going to get here? Talk to your partner first, or work on yourself first? You're going to work on yourself first, no matter what your partner does or doesn't do. We'll get to that in a moment. The shift in thinking is people who have passionate, healthy, wonderfully connected, great relationships with fabulous intimacy do not and are not on a mission to talk to their partner about all their deficiencies and how they need to change them and correct them because they're unhappy. Desire killer. What's the country song? It's hard to kiss the lips that chew your ass out every night. That's a real song. I wasn't being profane. That's an actual quote. Google it. It's a big desire killer. So we're making a shift to awareness, responsibility, and ownership. You want to enhance desire? Do you want your partner to want you? Yes. Do you want him to just have sex with you? Don't answer that. Many guys in here will go, oh yeah, I'll take that too. But do you want your partner to be present and desire you? Oh my gosh, even like you? Do you want to increase your partner's desire to have sex with you? Yes, I do. Thank you. I would be worried if you said no. It doesn't matter to me. I don't really care. I just want to be who I am. I just want people to love me for who I am. I want unconditional love. So you get to do whatever you want. Lay on the sofa, not do anything, not be helpful, be rude, live your life, have your emotions, and your partner gets to have desire for you? Where'd you learn that? Could it be Satan? I'm just asking. I'm just saying. He was a liar from the beginning. Oh, but that's what you want. Unconditional love. Love without condition. Yeah. I don't think your partner's really going to... I don't think that's going to increase their desire for you. Entitlement? So we're away with that. We're making a shift towards healthiness. For a partner who says, I love and respect, I like you. Why? Awareness of your own issues. Responsibility and ownership. No blame shifting. No, you caused me to be this way. I have a problem. It's you. I'm just being honest. Please don't. So what does it really mean? We're making a shift. You can only work on yourself. Period. Shift in critical thinking. Shift number two. You cannot get the desired outcome by constantly focusing on the outcome. Now let me say it another way. You are not likely in life to get what you want by constantly talking about what you want. Now, does that seem mysterious to you? Is it clear? Can you give me an example?
Nagging.
Thank you. Because nagging was that response. Constantly talking about what you want is usually an attempt to control the other person. Constantly talking about the outcome usually means, here's what I want, you have to cooperate. That's all it means. Now let me give you an example. I play golf. It's a game. Wait a minute. Is it? Is it life itself? No, it's a game. I get the two confused on the golf course. Now, in the game of golf, and maybe other games, but this I know for sure, one of the objectives is you want the golf ball to reasonably go where you want it to go. Correct? There's a target. There's the ball. That's where I want it to go. Can you control the flight of the golf ball? Can you directly control the flight of the golf ball? Here's a good thing about golf. Do you know where the golf ball goes, it will never lie to you? Because it's a direct result of the point of impact of the club face on the golf ball. The flight of the golf ball is a byproduct of something very simple that occurs right here. There it went. That way. You might not like it, but it never lies to you. You cannot work on the flight of the golf ball. What can you work on?
Swing.
Thank you. I can work and practice on the basics of my swing. I can practice the mechanics and break down the mechanics to improve my chances of the outcome. My process is work on my mechanics. My outcome is the flight of the golf ball went according to the swing mechanics that I just employed. It's not magic. It tells me something. This is what I say to all couples that I'm working with. There's always something right about whatever appears to be going wrong. Always. There's always data for when a plane crashes. You might not like it, it's tragedy. But there's legitimate reasons a plane crashes or it wouldn't have crashed. Would you agree? We are so focused on the ultimate outcome that we distress about the negative relationship that we're having. Do you know all couples I work with, this is one of the first things I go over. I say, the relationship you're having is giving you data. We're not going to change the relationship until we understand why you have the relationship that you actually have. We're going to let this work for you, not against you. You should be having this relationship. You know why? Because you're having it. Is that right? If you bought a brand new Lexus and you drove it home from the showroom floor, and when you got home you had a flat tire, I do not want to hear, I shouldn't have a flat tire. You do. You went through a construction zone, you picked up two nails. That usually makes a tire go flat. It should be flat if you have a nail in it. It would be magic if you didn't. Let's let reality work for you. So people talk about cooperation. This is why I ask you. How are we going to have this? I expected somebody to at least think or say, we are going to cooperate in order to have this. But cooperation becomes now the vehicle to have this. Cooperation is a byproduct of something else. If I'm going to constantly say, for us to have a good marriage, you need to do your homework. You're not doing your homework. I did mine. We need to cooperate, honey. In order to communicate effectively, we need to cooperate. There's that we term again. Now, what do I mean when I say, in order for us to effectively do this, we need to cooperate? Give me the meta message that I'm really saying. You need to do what I want you to do, and you're not doing it. Honey, in order to really get this done, give me your hand, we have to walk down the sidewalk and skip together. You're not skipping. You are not skipping. How are we going to get there unless we cooperate? People who constantly talk about the outcome by focusing on the outcome are exhausting. They kill all desire. You don't want to be with them. Here's what I want. Which is code for, I'm not getting it because you're not cooperating. Be quiet. Stop. What can we do? We're going to shift and understand that things like good communication is a byproduct of something else. Self-control, ownership, awareness, managing your emotions, listening to understand, non-demanding. You see, good communication is a byproduct of individual self-discipline. If you got a partner that can't regulate themselves and is all emotional and screaming at you, you can talk to the cows come home about having good communication. You've just got a human being on the other side that says, I don't want to control myself, I just want to yell at you. All you can do is work on you inside your own hula hoop. You can do that, and you will increase your percentages of having cooperation in a good relationship. But you can't constantly talk about it. Do you see how easily we slip into this? Guys, this is normal. But we need somebody to at least stand up and put normal words to this, that this doesn't work, has never worked, never will work. I'm all for this. I'm out to get wonderful cooperation, partnership, good communication, and a great relationship. But I cannot be the master or the authority on my spouse, constantly correcting her, telling her this is what I want. It will wear her out, and has. What I can be is a really neat person to be with. I can do that. If she's having her bad day, she can have her bad day. She gets on her broom and flies around the room for a little bit. I just stay in my hula hoop. And I wait till she lands. Sometimes that takes about 45 minutes. But I'm just patiently there. I don't have to run from the room screaming. She's okay. I love her. I can be a really good person to be with. And you can too. Shift in thinking number two. Now, why do I say this? Why do we say this? Because the nature of marriage requires this. The nature of marriage requires it. And tell me again, are we done at 8? 8:30, great. Lovely. The nature of marriage requires this shift in thinking. Why? Because, as Nancy has probably told you, marriage, monogamy, relationship with one person, is a people transforming crucible of growth. Did you grow up with a pressure cooker in your family? I don't own a pressure cooker, but my mom does. So on Sunday morning, she'd put a roast in there that is sinewy, tough, right? You don't put it in the oven. Why not, women? Dries it out. Doesn't make it tender. Just frustrates you. Good for shoe leather. Jerky, maybe. You put it in a pressure cooker. Now, you put a little water. You put the roast. You clamp the lid. Then you turn on the burner. You let it sit there, and what begins to happen? Mm-hmm. It heats up.
Pressure
builds. You know what's on top?
A
little relief valve, because if that wasn't there, the whole thing would blow up. Your kitchen would be a mess. So it's psst, psst. Marriage, monogamy, hang on, as God has designed it, is a pressure cooker. Did you know that? It's not a vending machine to meet our needs. Pop a dollar in, get some chocolate chip cookies out. This, my friends, if you didn't know it, was a transforming pressure cooker, and God put you on the burner, and he clamped down the lid, and you chose this person freely. What were you thinking? I complete you, you complete me. We're going to skip down the sidewalk together. I'm going to meet your needs, you're going to meet my needs. How long did that last?
6 months.
6 months. Some people, the honeymoon. It's all going to come to an end, because God says monogamy is different than other relationships that we're in, and it's designed to be, because it's designed to stimulate personal growth. Oh dear, hang on. I kind of like doing that. This feels very powerful. Okay, look at this. Marriage is a funnel. Now, what's true about this funnel? It's wide at the top, and the further down you go, the more narrow it is. Correct? Now, when you got married, a lot of factors, two of which I'm going to explain to you in just a moment, pulled you, whoa, right into this funnel. Didn't it? It got you married. You had enough attraction. You had enough warm fuzzies. You said, oh my goodness, this person is the cat's meow.
Meow.
Right? It pulled you right in. Everything's floating on the top. Easy to get into. Then what starts to happen? Pulls you right down. And the funnel starts to narrow. It starts putting pressure on you. Oh my goodness. You know all those growth issues that you kind of got away with your mom and dad? They're starting to come out now. You thought you'd never have to return to them. But God says, he wasn't finished with you yet. So he pulls you into this wonderful relationship which you freely entered. Nobody held a gun to your head. And it pulled you down. And then it started getting more narrow. And a lot of growth issues became more manifest. And we said something like this. You know, I didn't have these before I met you. All my friends at work think I'm incredible. My mom loves me. My best friends think I'm really funny. But there's something about being married to you that is exposing in me growth areas that don't come out when I'm at the top of the funnel. It's pulling me down. And I'm thinking, you caused it. I didn't have these before I met you. I have these when I'm with you. I don't have them when I'm relating over here to people who love me, accept me, and affirm me. They like me over here. You are having troubles with me. Now, we actually think that our spouse, our partner, is causing this. folks, have you figured out? They're just revealing what's already inside of you. You've just never been this far down the funnel for it to come out. Do you know how we find blockage in your arteries? What do we do? What's one thing that we do? Die is one. Mm-hmm. No, D-Y-E. This is a very morbid class. I knew where your heads were going.
Yeah, he's going to die. But he had blocked arteries.
No, D-Y-E. But they also put you on a treadmill. And they hook you up. And then they have you go with it. Oh my gosh, and then they speed it up and they incline it. Why do they do that?
Stress test.
And what does stress reveal?
Weakness.
Thank you. But we don't like stress, do we? God says, I'm going to put you in the pressure cooker. I'm going to pull you down the funnel. Because I need to see the weak places that I can't see otherwise. And you're married to just the person who's going to reveal what's already in you. And then you blame them. I didn't have this before I got on the treadmill. It's the treadmill's fault. Well, what's your solution? I'm never getting on the treadmill. I got that right there. Not about me. It's about you. So when you ask somebody who's naturally struggling with compulsive behaviors, alcohol, drugs, other behaviors, sometimes when it first introduction, I've got a non-drinker, a non-struggler with a struggler, and we'll talk a little bit. The non-struggler knows there's a problem, but the one who has a more pronounced problem is not yet ready to admit there's a problem, correct? Many times. So the non-struggling is talking. The struggling is being very quiet, waiting to see what my next move is, if I'm going to partner two against one. Right? They're going to see what I'm going to do. So when I turn to the person who may have an active struggle and say, help me understand your understanding of what you're going through. Because this person's dying for me to say, tell them that they're an alcoholic. Go ahead. I'm not doing that. That's unfair. It's wrong. I'm not doing it. I want to work with this person, love and respect, where he or she is. I say, help me understand what you're going through. Might you think, do you have a struggle? This person says, yes, I do. And points to the non-drinking, non-struggling spouse. At that point, this person comes unglued off my sofa. I'm not the one with the problem. It's very understandable. Okay? Now, he's thinking, I've got a problem. It's you. Now, here's a desire enhancer. If I think that you are creating this in me, and I fail to see that this is God's work in me, it's a desire killer. If I understand this is God's work in me and I welcome it with gladness and no shame, and I actively learn about me because I'm with you, it's a desire enhancer. This person may wish to hug you. They may like you. They may say, I'm so glad I'm married to you. Because you're not blaming me, and you're accepting that this is a natural part of monogamy. I'm so glad I'm with you, because you can talk about this in authentic ways without blaming me. I feel close to you. I feel like I know you. This is what marriage is designed to do. Let's let it work for us, not against us. Marriage is a ski slope. Here's the bunny slope. Here's the green slope, literally. so smart. There's a blue slope. You got to imagine it. That's a double diamond black. You just go straight down. I hate that thing. Here's what I know. My ski skills must keep pace with the steepness of the slope for me to enjoy and have fun. If my ski skills do not keep up with the steepness of the slope, and the steepness of the slope exceeds my ski skills, what do I experience?
Terror.
Is it fun? No. It's not fun. One time, I don't go skiing. I live in Dallas. I go to the beach. But two or three times I have gone to Colorado. They have mountains there. I have snow skied. I can ski the blue slope after a day getting warmed up on the green safely. One time my friend, after getting off of the ski lift, said, "Come on!" And I turned right instead of left. I got this far down this, and I couldn't go up, and I couldn't go down. My friend stopped halfway down, turned their skis around in slow motion, went, I felt such distress. I felt anger. I felt overwhelmed. I took my skis off. It's the only thing I could do. And I tried to walk all the way down. Because the steepness of the slope exceeded my ski skills. Monogamy is such that the further you go down and the longer you're married, your individual relationship skills must keep pace with how narrow this is, or it will kill all desire in you. You won't want to have sex. You won't want to hug and kiss. You're over your head. You're so upside down. Because this is pressuring the life out of you after the 7 year, several kids, 10 year, 13 year, and now you're avoiding, you don't care. And when people exceed their capability, the first thing they kill is desire. You ever talk to somebody and they say, again, I grew up in music. Somebody says, "Man, I'd really like to play guitar." Great. You own one? No. I should go buy one. I got a friend selling guitars. Okay. They go buy a guitar. Later on, I say, "How's that guitar coming?" "Ah, don't have time." I mean, you wanted to play the opening riff to, I date myself, Stairway to Heaven. You thought that was really cool. Yeah. Caused you to buy a guitar, didn't it? Yeah. What happened? "I don't like practicing." "You don't like getting your little finger right there?" "No, it's too much work." So you couldn't stand the process. "Yeah, I don't want to do it." So what did you do with desire? You killed it. Friends, I see it all the time in marriages. People talk about wanting to have a great, passionate, connected marriage, and they won't do the simple skills of learning how to relate. And then year by year by year, they don't know how to grow, and the steepness of the slope is happening whether they want it to or not. It's getting steeper, getting steeper, getting steeper. They're upside down. Their solution is, "I don't care." You know where they want to return to? Does that make sense? With no shame, I mean this with absolute zero condemnation. Zero. let's have an affair. Because up here, we go back to the top of the funnel. Nothing's required of me like it is down here. Pornography, easy eroticism. But if done correctly, the next relationship's going to pull you down. What are you going to do then? You're going to have to sooner or later develop the skills that go hand in hand with monogamy to enhance and create desire with a lifelong partner. That means I got to grow. This is why your shift in critical thinking to having a passionate marriage has frankly very little to do with the partner that you're with. It has everything to do with you. If your solution is you got to change your partner for you to feel desire, let me put it this way. When we began at the top of the funnel, desire was looking for its object. What do I mean by that? You turned me on. Okay, what turned me on? Something outside of me turned me on. Does that make sense? It floated the boat. Something about you floated my boat. Do you know the further down the funnel that you go? Desire is looking for a new subject. It's looking for a new you. You already got your object. This person that you're with floated your boat. They were kind enough, beautiful enough, sweet enough, attractive enough. They floated you. It created desire in you. Do you remember that? Sooner or later, passive desire has to shift to something more active. Shift number 3. Very critical for mature, passionate couples. The foundation of your and my desire has to shift from passivity, you turn me on. Oh, I'm glad that person turns you on. But if all of your poker chips are on that side, you might initially feel that as a compliment. What does it become? At first, it's a compliment. You, only you. Oh my gosh, you produce this in me. Isn't that a compliment? Or what is it later?
Burden.
Yeah, it's codependency and a heavy burden. You need to do it for me. Do it for me. Don't do this, do this. Don't do this, do this. No, don't do this, do this. Kiss me this way, don't kiss me that way. Look at me this way. You didn't look at me this way. You need to look at me this way. You're not looking at me this way. Talk to me this way. Don't talk. I'm not saying all of that can't be talked about. I'm not. I got to give you the foundation. You cannot talk about these things and shove all of your poker chips over to your partner. They'll initially experience it as a wonderful compliment. Only me. Man, I got all the power in the world. Really? You got a heavy burden. This is going to be a desire killer sooner or later. The foundation for your desire in monogamy has to shift from what it was up here. That's the nature of marriage. It has to shift because we're going down the funnel and the relationship ski slope is getting steeper. So I'm going to give you 2 things. I know I say 3, but the third one is another example of other validation dependent. Okay? I brought my Easter basket. Now, this is my precious basket. These are my precious eggs. Now, when we met each other, here's what I said, and here's what you said. These are my precious eggs. This is my precious self-esteem egg. I think you're fabulous. You're so attractive, so wonderful, so kind, so loving. We have so much fun. I'm going to give you a gift. That's my precious self-esteem egg. I don't give that to many people. I'm going to give it to you. Isn't that kind of me? I'm giving you something I don't give to many people. How do you feel? You feel good?
Uncomfortable.
Why? You love me, I love you. My gosh. Here, I don't give this one. And we've dated now for about 6 months. You got my self-esteem egg? This is my precious identity egg. This is how I know I'm myself. So that's how I know myself. I'm going to give it to you. You have two of my precious eggs. I love you. You love me. And you've given me some of your precious eggs. Now, I've got about six eggs in here, and over time, there you go. Now you're working with me. Let's cooperate. I love this. Now, you have so many. That's my adequacy and competency egg right there. Okay? See this one? This is special. This, my friends, is all that I am, egg. I give it to you. Now, I've been hurt in the past. I don't give this to many people. I give it to you. Now, I've given this sweet, wonderful person most, if not all, of my precious eggs in my basket. Who has to be my focus? The person who's carrying all my precious eggs. Are you doing okay with my eggs?
I don't have a basket.
No, you don't have a basket. It's not my problem. Are you carrying the eggs okay? I'm just checking. So, you know, tomorrow, oh my gosh, yes. So tomorrow night I'm going to call you and I'm going to go, hey, how you doing? You doing okay?
Having trouble holding all these eggs.
Oh my goodness, I don't want to hear that. You're fine, you're wonderful. You know, I just need to call you to ask you how you're doing because I need to know how we're doing. Okay? Mm-hmm. I need to know how I'm doing. How are you with me? We okay? Code 4.
Are you okay?
Am I okay? I just need to know. Now, you know it's said with some extreme codependency issues, a truly codependent person, when they have a near-death experience, everybody else's life flashes before their eyes. Not their own. Because all of my precious eggs are over here. Now, what I want to call this is, friends, maybe other validation, because she has all my eggs, help float the boat when we initially got together. I validate you. You validate me. We have exchanged eggs. I think you're wonderful. You think I'm wonderful. I've got all your precious eggs. You've got mine. And our focus has to be here. And if you interrupt and trip, I'm watching. So if we talk, and I need, require, notice my words, I did not say wish or want. I need, require your validation. You've got all my precious eggs. All my poker chips are over here. Now let me back up. It is okay to wish and want and prefer to get validated by somebody. I think you look wonderful. You did a great job. I love those clothes that you're wearing. My gosh, you carry yourself well. You're great at conversation. Those are wonderful validations. Fabulous. My key word is, are you dependent upon it? Because I know you love it when you get it. What happens when you don't? Are you grumpy? Are you gripey? Are you moody? Okay? Because that's going to show some dependency and codependency needs in you. Now look, other validation, dependency, floated the boat at the top of the funnel. You're 3 to 5 to 7 years into this. That's not going to float the boat. That's a desire killer. That's what it is. It's time to grow up. It's unattractive. It's immature. It's childlike. I don't want to be this way anymore because it leads to master-slave relationship. I've got to constantly focus on you because you're holding most of my poker chips because I gave them to you. If Christ set us free, he set us free indeed. Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there's liberty, Paul says. I want to grow myself up in my own hula hoop. I'm going to hand over some of my eggs, but you can drop them. You're human. I'm still okay. You still love me? I don't need or require your validation. If I do, I've got to follow you around the room. Now, folks, when I'm working with couples, truly, when I say, and they say, we fight all the time, we argue, I want to know, tell me about your fights. I just want to be in your living room with you. And a lot of times they get in a fight in my office, which I think is wonderful. Because I'm living with them. Do you know what most fights are about? Nope. It might be about money, but I'm not looking for content. Most fights are, I need you to validate that what I'm saying is accurate. The sun is shining, it's a beautiful day.
No, it's raining outside.
Look outside! Look outside!
Okay. It's still raining.
Unbelievable! I cannot believe you would sit here and look at me. So couples fight over, honey, you know the other night at that party, I heard you say this. I did not say that. Yes, you did. No, I didn't. Yes, you did. I was there. I did not say that. Yes, you did. I've got three friends who are standing right there. I didn't say it. And who are those three friends? Well, Tom, Bill, and Steve. Well, of course they would say that. I said that. That's Tom, Bill, and Steve. They're all skewed to your side anyway. We knew that. Unfair. Well, honey, any reasonable person who would say what you said is not a very reasonable person. I can Google it. Well, I just saw my counselor the other day. He said, and she said, I'm perfectly acceptable and right. What is this? Why? What is this fight?
Being right.
Yes. This is a validation struggle over, I said the sun is shining. You need to look at me and nod your head. Okay, wait a minute. How many eggs do they have right now? They got all of them. You've got all my eggs. Look, if you're so right, why do you need anybody to look at you and go, yes, you're so right? Because you need an audience. You know, if you're married long enough, I'm not your audience. Honey, if you think it's raining outside, go, girl. Rock on. No, dear, I need you to affirm that it's raining. I need your support. The Bible says, trump card, trump card. She just pulled out an ace and threw it right down. God says, you're supposed to support me and love me as Christ loved the church. Honey, I see the world differently than you do. It doesn't look like it's raining outside to me. Yes, it is. I need you to say it. Where are the poker? All the golden eggs are over on this side. Could you please pull them back on your side, stand on your own two feet, speak your own opinion, and you don't need an audience. You don't need everybody to nod their head and go, yes, 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 I think you're right. What do we do with our best friends? We spill out and create our stories, and then we all want them to look at us and go, oh my gosh, you're so right. Thank you for being my best friend. That person that you're married to, I couldn't agree more. Thank you so much. We got to be careful about all that. This is a need for validation that's very immature, and let me go back to our topic. It's a desire killer. It really is. A desire enhancer is when you can stand on your own two feet, say what you believe to be true, take responsibility for it in humility, and hold your own opinion, even if your spouse looks at you and says, I think you're nuts. Okay, honey, but I see the world differently than you do.
Well, I mean, any reasonable person wouldn't say it that way.
I'm a reasonable person, and I see it that way.
Okay, all right.
Yay! This isn't a fight. It isn't an argument. Point number two under this, we got to make a shift. And I brought a flowery one because the other one cracked. Okay, I'm sorry. We're going to go this way this time. You don't want to do it. We're going to go this way. Here you go. There's your mirror. I'm sorry. You don't have to stand up. Wait, you're taking the flower. Now, when we first got together, I fell in love with a reflected sense of self. This is at the top of the funnel. This floated the boat. Now, I'm relating to you. you're relating to me. And I'm being me. And when I'm being me, you smile, you say, you, dude, are the man. And I'm loving this. Now what's happening is I'm being me, and she's pinging back to me, you with me? Mm-hmm. A reflection of me that I love. She sees me the way I see me. I love it. And I'm pinging back to her how she sees herself. Now, do I yet love her? What am I love? Yes, I love the reflection she's giving back to me. It's called a reflected sense of self. Now, if we're married long enough, she ain't going to reflect me back to me, because she sees me differently than I see me. And I don't like her for that. I need you to see me the way I see me and affirm me the way I see me, because when you don't, it just kills all desire in me. Now, those people at work and my best friends, they see me the way I see me and they affirm me for it. I love them. You, I'm trying to convince you, you're wrong. And you have family of origin issues. I privately talked to my counselor. I described this and my counselor agreed with me. You have daddy issues. So you're just putting me in your box, and I don't like it. But my spouse, whom I'm married to, who loves me, cares about me, cannot see me fully the way I require her to see me, because she sees me more accurately. Now she's in a pickle. How does she love me? Because I keep telling her, love me the way I need you to love me. And now she's thinking, but at what point am I lying? Right? That kills desire when she knows I can't handle it. In the heart of every woman, it kills desire. Then I'm going to come and say, let's have passionate sex. Be in love with me the way I'm in love with me. I can't. That's love. And God is designing this to take me down the funnel. Will I understand that and work with it and think this is the greatest gift to help me see me? Will I see it as a great gift? Or will I see it as the biggest problem in my life? And will she see me that way? And along with this, let's please shift away from need-based. I need. I don't want to hear about marriage meeting your needs. Marriage will meet your needs, but that's a byproduct of many other things. If you start there, it's a desire killer. Let's have sex. I'm needy. Please, mercy sex. Have mercy on me. It's a real desire killer. You okay so far? Okay. So what happens on this journey of maturity, we do become aware of ourselves through the responses of others. You know, every small child who is born into this world is born without a self. They gain a self, how? Through the responses of others outside of them. Nobody has an innate self. So when you are cooing and leaning over a small baby, infant, where do their eyes go? They lock onto your face, into your eyes. You're breathing life into this child with your facial expressions and how you respond. This child is learning who they are through reciprocal responses from those important images in their life. We become aware. So the responses of significant others tell us who we are. That's normal development for infants, children, adolescents, and young adults. But it stops there. You got to make a shift. This encourages our anxiety reduction, and it increases our positive self-esteem through the responses of others. That's normal development. We naturally become very other-focused in order to be okay with ourselves. But maturity, as God has designed it, requires a shift away from other-dependent to God validation. Let me say that again. Maturity requires it. There's going to come a day when God is going to kick out the props from all under us, and you're standing on your own two feet. That's good. Your spouse can't validate you the way you need them to, want them to, wish them to, or require. They can't. You've reached the limit. It's time to grow up and go face to face with God. Where are you going to get your validation? If you'll come to your sexual experience in intimacy without requiring anybody else's validation, you'll increase desire. If you're needy and it's fraught with other validation dependent, it's hard. It's difficult. Affirmation, validation, and the opinion of others is absolutely okay. I have no problem with that. There is no problem with that. But dependency upon this is not okay. So I want to see what happens when you don't get it. Because then we're going to flesh out how dependent you are. You know when you're getting it? You don't know where you're weak. You know when you're going downwind with a sailboat? Can you feel the wind? Uh-uh. When you tack, you get the blunt force of the wind. I want to know your real maturity. Where will I see it? When you don't get it. Do you know, we so have a satiation model in Christianity, and it's incorrect. As long as I'm satiated, I'm happy. As long as my needs are getting met and God's meeting my needs, boy, aren't I mature. You know where real maturity is going to come? When you're empty. It ain't happening. God's silent. I want to see who you are then. Because when you're going downwind, you look so mature. You know, when your partner's validating you the way you want to be validated, you got the best marriage in the world. I want to see what happens when that quits. Who are you then? Can you love then? Can you stand on your own two feet then? Can you connect with your spouse then and not take it personally? This shift requires thoughtful, conscientious effort. It's not natural. Did you know that all growth is not natural? All growth is movement from the you that you are now to not you. If growth is natural, you're never going to do it. Because when people say, well, this is naturally who I am, you're not growing. I want you to tell me this is so unlike me. Good for you. That's unlike you. Yes. Did you just lean into a growth area? Yes. Does it feel awkward? Yes. Keep at it. And then when you master that, there'll be a new area. All growth is movement from who you naturally are to who you're not. Okay? Love is that short period of time when a person of the opposite sex holds the same opinion of us as we do ourselves. And if you can say her last name, then truly you indeed are Polish. Because I'm half Polish. All my mother's side of the family came from Poland. I've spent 2 full summers, 6 months total in Poland, ministering to Catholic priests and nuns. So that's Magdalena Samozwaniec. I will forever cherish my original misconceptions of you. You know the real you that keeps showing up? I don't like it. You know that 5x7 that I have on my desk that I can project all of my projections onto who I want you to be and who I idealize you to be? That's who I'm in love with. I love that picture. Please, you fit into that picture. You know, this real you keeps showing up. I don't like that. But I will forever cherish my original misconceptions of you because I was in love with that. And lastly, mindful of our time, lastly, shift in thinking. Did you know and realize that holding on to a negative does not produce a positive? Tell me how that works in marriage.
Create the spark.
But why do we hold on to negatives?
Unforgiveness. Makes us right.
Yeah, it makes us right. Unforgiveness. What are we trying to accomplish when we hold on to a negative? Usually. If I can just hold on to this negative about you.
Control, manipulation.
I think control and manipulation ultimately organized to get you to change. I'm not letting go of this negative because once I let it go, I ain't got no leverage. I'm going to hold on to it and talk about it till you finally get motivated to change it. Because once you see how personally distressed I am that you are this way, you will be motivated to change. Why? Because you love me so much and you wouldn't want me to be distressed, would you? That's crazy. But this is what we do. We deeply hold on to negative attributes about our partner and want to communicate it to them to motivate them to finally kick it in gear and change. Have you come to the place where you deeply realize holding on to negative images that you are certain are true about your partner probably doesn't motivate them to change? They didn't hire you as their Holy Spirit. I bet they didn't pay money to hire you as their consultant. Sure, point out anything you see wrong in me. Unless they tell you that directly. I'm open for correction. I sure want to be a good spouse in the right manner at the right time. I'm interested in knowing. That's different. But if you give it unsolicited, it's about you. It's not about them. It's about you. And then you're going to say, I'm just trying to help. Okay, do you want to help and do you want to be right or do you want to increase desire? Thank you. You want to increase desire. So responsible sharing versus irresponsible sharing. I'll come back to that. When is it right to share your emotions? What's the number one reason that people normally share their emotions with the other person? What are they trying to accomplish?
Understand.
Uh-huh. Good job. They share their emotions to be understood. If you understand, what will you do? I'm sharing my emotions with you. You will agree. And if you will agree that I'm having these emotions and my emotions have merit and they are valid and I'm seeking your understanding, what's next? Thank you! Ding, 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 ding. Number one reason why I share my emotions with you is to get you to change. So when people say, do you want to know what I'm feeling? Sooner or later, the other spouse going down the funnel says, let me be honest. No. You do not care what I am feeling. Because what's going on is, there's such a goal orientation to why this person wants to share their feelings. Change you. How can you tell long-term married couples down the funnel in a restaurant? They're not talking to each other. Hold to the dictum, there's always something right when something seems to be going wrong. Why aren't they talking to each other? There are good reasons. Because they're sick and tired that every time somebody brings something up, there's a goal attached to it. That goal is to change you, to get you to listen, accept, understand me. And if you listen, accept, and understand me, you'll do something about it. People don't want to listen to it. They don't want to talk. They're tired of goals. You know, when they were dating, they didn't have goals to change each other. They shared to be known, not to change the other. They talked about interesting things. And the other person said, my gosh, I'm interested that you're interested in that. And they say, yeah, I was experiencing all these emotions. I got on this roller coaster. Oh, my gosh, my friend put me on the very front car. I hate roller coasters. And it went down the first big hill, and I thought it was going to die. And the other person says, oh, my gosh, I rode on a roller coaster once. I had that same experience. That is fascinating. Did you, like, about throw up? Yes. Did you get back on? No. Well, you know, I got back on. What are they doing? They're sharing. Is there any goal to change the other? No. Oh, but after they got together and they started going down the funnel, everything became goal attached so that one says, hey, you know, Tom and Betty are having a garage sale this weekend. Now they're in a restaurant. The other one goes, so? Well, I'm just saying, you know, Tom and Betty are just, they're going to have a garage sale this weekend, and well, it's going to be a pretty weekend. Okay. Well, I'm just thinking we could have a garage sale. Oh, so Tom and Betty are having a garage sale. And this is the vehicle. Well, you know, I mean, what have you got planned? I thought maybe you could get the garage ready and, you know, a lot needs to be done. Oh, my gosh. So it all started with Tom and Betty. Interesting. But Tom and Betty is a vehicle to tell me what to do. Yes. Once a person becomes conditioned to this, talk to the hand. You act like you don't want to listen. I don't. Because, you know, I'm waiting for the punchline. Punchline is, I'm deficient. You're unhappy. There's something else I need to do. Really, I get it. You know, I just love sharing with you. Just have another margarita. Now, folks, stay with me. I'm laying a foundation. I've given you four critical shifts for a passionate marriage. I'm giving scales, etudes, arpeggios. You've got to memorize chord structure so that when they play the music, you know where it's going. A great musician in Dallas, phenomenal guitar player, gave me one of my greatest affirmations and a compliment that I've ever been given, aside from my dad talking to me. Joe, a phenomenal guitarist, we were packing up equipment one night. I worked my way through school being a musician in graduate school and was accepted at a major music school. I didn't go. I went to seminary instead. Joe looked at me and said, I've never, ever, as long as I've known you and played with you, performed with you, I've never heard you play any note out of the proper chord structure. I said, Joe, it's a high compliment. Thank you. My point is, you must work in the confines of these four critical areas. If you will do so, you will increase the chance of really connecting passionately. Great sex. But that's the bullseye that Nancy's going to get at. Lastly, I got 1 minute. Here's your takeaways. Do not talk to your spouse about meeting your needs. Instead, shift your thinking to wishes, wants, hopes, and desires. Once you use the word need, you've bound them. Wish, hope, prefer, and invite them. Honey, I sure would love it if you would consider. But don't talk about your needs, because that's a bind. Stop focusing on what your partner is or isn't doing. Instead, shift your focus to what you can do. Shift your focus. What will you do? And do it freely. Do what you can do. Change your negative filter about your spouse. Instead, be accepting of them as they are. Look for the good reasons to why they are the way they are. Accept those. If they're going to change them, they have to find the value. If you're going to promote the value every day that they wake up, Stop requiring your spouse to listen. I said require, accept, understand, and validate you. Stop it. Allow your spouse the freedom to simply listen to you. Don't pull on them for excessive affirmation and validation. You do not need this from them. You don't. You have your own thoughts, your own opinions. Share them. That's what you did when you were dating. Be careful about underlying attempts to change your spouse, like complaining about them, being negative, or sharing your emotions too much. Instead, be patient, understanding, finding the good. Be encouraging and understanding. Focus towards the good relationship you wish to nurture and create. Speak from the very best in you, the courageous, mature part, rather than immature, fleshly part. Galatians 5, 22 and 23. Have your emotions, but don't allow your emotions to have you. You have emotions, but you are not the sum total of your emotions. That's your takeaway. What a blessing to be with you. Sweet Nancy will be back, and you're so kind. Thank you. Father, Father in heaven, who loves us, cares for us, adores us. Son of God, who has died for us to redeem us, forgive us of all our sins and give us eternal life. Holy Spirit, who empowers us, comforts us, walks with us and convicts us and changes us. To you we give all glory and honor. In Christ's name, amen.